Hello there and welcome along to this week's Racing Postcast. It is Monday the 14th of February. Happy Valentine's Day to one and all. I'm Maddie Plale. I'm joined this week by Lee Mottisett and Robbie Wilders to discuss all the action across the weekend. It was dubbed as the Saturday that Britain were to fight back after a really strong Dublin Racing Festival for Cheltenham Clewesdon. I guess you can say we did that in the limited capacity that we could. We had a competitive Betfair hurdle and some wild cards thrown up in both the Denman Chase and the Game Spirit. Also, good action at Warwick, where Edward Stone confirmed his position in the market for the Arkle. We'll talk about him later on in the show. So stick with us throughout to get some insight and tips from our expert team. First off, let's talk about one of the most exciting horses trained in Britain, I think it's fair to say, and that is Brave Man's Game. There's been a big talking point last week about the form of the Paul Nicholls stable, but his stable star, or at least one of them, showed no ill effects when winning the opening handicap on Newbury's Saturday card. He was the 8-11 favourite, but jumped superbly to hold off Pat's Fancy and Grumpy Charlie, who were capable handicappers getting plenty of weight. Was this what you expected from this horse, Robbie?
Not at all, no. I thought he was really vulnerable running off a mark of 159 for a novice. Pretty sure that's not happened in over 10 years. And he's actually done it quite cosily. It was quite a fair race as well. I thought the two in behind were kind of improving novices on the upgrade. I thought he's really vulnerable. And obviously with the cloud over the Nicholls stable, that was a concern whether he could back that up. But no, this was excellent. Just on RPRs as well, he's put up a 167 figure. That's massive. And that actually puts him ahead of Monkfish, who was last season's top 3-mile novice chaser. So I think we're looking at something quite special there. I think he can definitely give Galopin de Champ a race over 3 miles at Cheltenham going forward. But Nicholls mentioned the idea of potentially dropping in trip if it gets testing at Cheltenham. So I'd definitely keep an eye on the weather forecast that week, because if he does drop to the Mars trip, he's about 20-1 for that. He won't be anywhere near that price. So yeah, but ultimately, yeah, really impressed by Brave Man's Game.
Yeah, I think for me, the likes of Galopin de Champ, this horse, Lompress, they have the potential to stay further, but equally they're not short of gears. So the option to drop down in trip could look quite an appealing one. For me, Lee, one of the most interesting aspects of this race was the aftermath and what Harry Cobden had to say. He thought he learned an awful lot about the horse and actually blamed himself for aspects of the performance. Just expand on what he had to say and what you think in response.
Well, he made all again, as he raced probably, to be fair, in all his races over fences. I was at Haydock when he won in mid-November in a graduation chase and jumped spectacularly there and made all. I think Harry would prefer to drop him in, as you would most good horses in a Grade One race, particularly one with as much pace as he's got. Robbie referred to the fact the horse hasn't got, well, isn't short of pace and could easily drop down in trip at Cheltenham. So I think you would see him ridden more conservatively in the Brown Advisory at Cheltenham. I think that still is his race. It's certainly the race that Paul Nicholls, after the race, was making clear that is the first choice contest. If we did get a really heavy festival, I guess that might change. You wouldn't normally get festivals like that. I thought it was a super performance. As Robbie says, to win off 159 was particularly pleasing. I thought it was great he ran in the race. I love the way this horse has been campaigned. 4 runs this season already, 2 against senior opposition on his first 2 starts. Then he wins a Grade One and then he runs in a handicap. I mean, that's a perfect sort of preparation for me. Love to see good horses running in handicaps. I keep beating that drum. Nicholls was adamant that he would come on for the run, that he'd left a fair bit to work on. He was running for a stable that hadn't been in great form. So again, I think that's an even bolder tick in the box for this performance. The quandary is we don't know who we'll be up against if he runs that Brown Advisory, as we expect. Willie Mullins, my interpretation of Willie's speak is that he still would prefer to run him in the longer race, Galopin de Champ. I think the way he was talking about the horses jumping, being putting the pressure at Leopardstown down in trip or over that trip, made me think he would prefer to run him over 3 miles, but plenty of judges, including I think Lady Hislop and Ruby Walsh were saying last week that they think he's better suited to the 2 mile five race. So it's going to be fascinating to see which way he goes. But wherever he goes, whether he runs in the brand advisory or not, I think Brave Man's Game would already on the figures be a very worthy winner of that race. I think he's a better horse than he showed in the spring over hurdles last season. And I'm really excited about seeing Cheltenham.
Brilliant. For what it's worth, I think Galloping Deschamps should go for the shorter race as well. But anyway, the betting is 5-4 for him for the Brown Advisory. 3-1 Brave Man's Game. Capodanno, A Hoy Senor, 10-1, and it's 12-1 barn. Don't forget, Paul Nicholls and Harry Copland team up with Top of the Game to win the race in 2019. So it would be good to see them get one back over the Irish, wouldn't it? Moving on to the Betfair Denman Chase. This was Clandazobo's for the taking, really, we thought, at least beforehand. But Eldorado Allen, the grey for Colin Tizard and Brendan Powell, emerged as a bit of a wild card for the Cheltenham Festival. He has the option of the Ryanair and isn't in the Gold Cup, but Colin Tizard now has the quandary whether to supplement him for National Hunt Racing's Blue Ribbon. What do you think, Lee?
I don't know if they will or they won't. I think one of the owners, John Romans, after the race, was very, very keen on the idea of going for the Gold Cup. He's one of these people that lives for the Cheltenham Gold Cup, as, you know, Colin Tizard and that whole family do as well. I got the sense that Colin might be leaning more towards the Ryanair, but if he only wants to go for the Gold Cup and he's happy to spend the 30 grand supplementary entry fee, which is actually a little bit more than the owner's prize when he was for winning the Denman Chase on Saturday, then why not have a go? I would always rather see, if there's a choice between the Ryanair or the Gold Cup, I would always rather a horse runs in the Gold Cup. The Gold Cup is the Gold Cup. It should be the race that horse who might be deemed a contender for the Gold Cup runs in. So I hope he does go for the Gold Cup. It's a completely wide open Gold Cup this year. A lot of this season's festival races are really sprinkled liberally with Stardust, and they have a host of exciting, talented horses in there. The Gold Cup this year doesn't have that quite same feel to me. It's a fascinating race, and it's an open race, but it's not a vintage Gold Cup by any means. So, yeah, stick him in it. If they don't mind spending the money, I would go in that direction. He'd always look like a horse who might well thrive over 3 miles. He was ridden like a horse that Brendan Powell thought would stay 3 miles. He did stay 3 miles, or he said 2.75. The problem, I suppose, is the Gold Cup is an extra 3 furlongs on a more demanding track. So you couldn't guarantee he would excel over the Gold Cup trip having won this race. But even so, it was a properly pleasing performance. Royal Pagai, I thought he didn't diminish his Gold Cup claims. I don't think he's a Gold Cup winner. But on ground that wasn't as testing as he would have liked, he ran a perfectly good race. Clan was just a bit clan. I think he's a bit like that. You can't always rely on him, and they all stick blinkers on him when he goes to Aintree. I actually would have loved to have seen him go to Kempton for the Coral Trophy on Saturday week instead of the Newbury race. But listen, he's run a perfectly good race, and he'll go on to Aintree and no doubt run better in blinkers.
Okay, so that's Lee's analysis of the Denman Chase. Robbie, I thought it was Eldorado Allen's jumping that really set him apart, and he does have that speed. A Holden Gold Cup winner at the start of the season, of course. So what sort of position do you think he would be in a Gold Cup? Could you see him staying out that extra distance?
Yeah, he did jump outstandingly, didn't he? I'd have my reservations over an extra 3 furlongs, like Lee says, over a more demanding track. I was actually questioning whether he might even get the 2.75 miles, but you can't argue that he saw that out well. I think of the two who fought out the finish, Eldorado Allen and Royal Pagai, I'd favour Royal Pagai over further. He just seems an out-and-out stayer to me. He's proved he does handle a bit of good to soft, but I just feel like he needs a bit of soft ground to kind of slow the other horses down around him. And if he did get testing in the Gold Cup, I'd certainly... I could see Royal Pagai running a very big race there. You could say Clandazobo was maybe a bit disappointing, but I actually did think he had quite a bit against him. Obviously, the stable form, as we've been banging on about, he's 10 years old now, and horses can't always keep up that kind of form at that age. He obviously beat in the race last year. I thought it was a weaker running last year, and he had a hard race in the King George. So, I mean, I wouldn't quite give up on Clown. I know he's getting on a bit, but he'll go on to Aintree and Punchestown, and I'm sure he'll do quite well. But, yeah, that wasn't really his race, I don't think.
For me, he's a horse that I find very interesting because I think he can be a bit in and out and almost a little bit quirky. I'd love to see him in a handicap. Lee, you mentioned the race at Kempton. Call me crazy here, but I would be fascinated to see how Clan de Zobo would fare in a Grand National. Am I barking mad?
No, not at all. No, you're not barking mad at all. In fact, in some ways, I was a little surprised they didn't put him in the Grand National this year. Maybe it's one they're thinking more for next season when they might try and do a Neptune Collange with him from the top of the weights. But no, I think he's certainly a horse who, on a track like that, he could love it or he could hate it. But if he loved it, I think he could go around there on the bridle, get into lovely rhythm. And yeah, listen, I wouldn't be upset at all to see him in a Grand National. I wonder if this season they might go from Aintree on to the Bet365 Gold Cup at Sandown.
Yeah.
Maybe instead of going on to Punchestown this
year. That would be the other race on my radar, because of course they won it with Tidal Bay off a big weight, didn't they?
Yeah, absolutely. But no, Maddie, I do not think you are thinking in any way madly there at all.
That's very kind. Onwards.
I kind of do myself, but I just think I can't. It's a handicap, and he's rated 172. To win a handicap, you've got to probably have a handicap that good. You've got to have at least half a stone in hand, and I can't see it myself. I mean, again, it'd make for a great spectacle. I like to see Grade One horses running in handicaps, but I think that'd be a really, really tough ask.
It would be a tough ask, wouldn't it? But I think the weights are condensed these days, aren't they, Lee?
Well, that's right. So he wouldn't. I mean, who knows what he'd got in 12 months' time? But he wouldn't be off 172. He'd be condensed from that. It'd probably be down the weights a bit anyway. Neptune Collange won the Grand National off 157. Obviously not 172, but again, he was condensed. I think you have to be big, bold, and adventurous, and I would go for the Grand National in what year is next year, Maddie? 2023. There you go. That's a plan.
We're all feeling a little bit tired today, aren't we? Go on, Robbie, have your say.
I've just had my say. I wouldn't do that myself because I just think it would be... if his mark does fall down a bit, then it could be interesting, but I just think it's a really big ask and he's not really the right age to be lumping such a big weight in a handicap with a few unexposed improvers in behind.
One horse who is still improving is Funambul Sibala. He won the Betfair Exchange Game Spirit Chase and he really seemed to enjoy himself. He certainly loves it around Newbury with his low slung jumping style, but perhaps not the champion chase next for him. Robbie, would that be too much of an ask?
Yeah, I think so. I think he falls just short of the very top level. Don't forget, before that race, he was only rated 154. So, I mean, while it was a career best, I wouldn't really fancy him against the likes of Shishkin and Energamine. Obviously, Shishkin had his number at Aintree last season. It would be interesting if avoiding some top-class horses over that trip, but because, I mean, it didn't really work for him as a 2.5 miler early in the season. I know Venetia Williams tried to kind of transform him into that. But, there'll be a nice prize along the way. I just don't know whether it's going to be at Cheltenham.
Yeah, he could be one of those who's quite hard to place now, given his rating. And he seems to need the minimum trip and not too testing at that. Lee, one of the stories of the season so far has been Venetia Williams and Charlie Deutsch. The rider had his first Grade One winner just a couple of weekends ago. What do you think is the key to their success this year? Because they seem to be farming all the major races.
Yeah, well, Venetia's horses are in great form. Amazingly, that Silly Isles that she won with L'Empressé was her first Grade One in 20 years, which I found amazing, right back to when Golden Girl won the same race back in 2002. But she's an outstanding trainer. She gets horses, she'll do the job. And she's got an outstanding jockey as well, I think. I think Charlie Deutsch, from one week to the next, is just producing performances that really take the eye. He's a very uncomplicated, unfussy jockey. Horses get into a rhythm for him. He just doesn't use his whip a huge amount either. I think there's so much to like about Charlie Deutsch and about Funambul Sibala. I'd agree with Robbie. I can't see him winning a champion chase, particularly this year's champion chase, because you've got Shishkin, Shaka and Pessoa, and Ergamen. I mean, it's a stunning champion chase, and he's not as good as those horses yet, but he's improving, he's progressive, and he deserves to be in the race. And I say, a bit like with the Gold Cup, if you have a horse who wins a champion chase trial, it looks like a horse should be good enough to run in the champion chase, then run in the champion chase.
And crazier things have happened, of course. These races don't always go to the horses we expect.
They don't. Might as well, just and I thought David Jennings posted a piece today where I thought it made a good point about Sky Pirate, who finished fourth in that race, but don't dismiss him for a repeat win in the Grand Annual. He's running small field races this season. They've not been his thing, but in a big field, probably won't be a massively greater mark than 12 months ago. He could run one of the Grand Annual again.
Okay, that's from DJ's column today. Lee agrees with him. Moving on from the informed jockey of Charlie Deutsch, another jockey who's going places is Stan Shepherd. Of course, he won the Welsh Grand National aboard I Will Do It, and he claimed the scalps of some other really great horses in the Betfair Hurdle handicap again for this rider. Glory and Fortune was the name of the horse he triumphed aboard, and he got both in winning this race. I Like to Move It for the Twist and Davis team finished second, and First Street for Nicky Henderson, who fielded the favourite for the race, Broomfield Berg, finished third. Lots said in the pre-match, I guess you can say, about the small fields in this race, Lee. It's a race that is worth more than the county hurdle over similar distance at the Cheltenham Festival. Why weren't there that many horses in it?
No Irish horses. They'd all run in the Liffey Handicap Hurdle at Leopardstown, their equivalent race the weekend before. Britain does not have a huge number of good two-mile hurdlers at the moment. That was emphasised by the fact that a number of the leading contenders in this year's race were novices, as is often the case these days in the Betfair Hurdle, but they really were stacking the top of the market. You do sometimes get strange, weird years where it's hard to explain why something has happened. I made the point somewhere else this week that in the 1994 Betfair Hurdle, which was then the Tote Gold Trophy, there are only 11 runners in the race at large action, beat Oh So Risky. So you do sometimes get weird years. There was a Hennessy one year that Gofar won with a single figure field. Sometimes strange things happen, but I think this is a reflection of the fact that we don't at the minute have a lot of good 2 mile hurdlers. That 100 grand race at Lingfield's Winter Million Meeting, their 2 mile handicap hurdle, that only had 11 runners. It's disappointing. We still got a good race. And I think, you know, great to see Stan Shepherd continue his rise through the ranks. Glory and Fortune horse at the start of the season, I would not have seen as a likely winner of a race like that, but he's progressing. He ran a good race in the Christmas Hurdle at Kempton. Big effort from I Like to Move It in second. Nigel Twiston Davis thought he would have won with a Cheltenham Hill. Fortunately, they haven't got one of those at Newbury. They've got a Newbury flat. And I thought Nappers Hill in fourth ran an eye-catching race, travelled beautifully through it. And I think he would be interesting in a handicap somewhere, maybe a County Hurdle type or a Coral Cup type. So I liked him. And at least we've got another British horse now to run in the Champion Hurdle, Maddie. Yes, he's only a 50-1 shot. Yes, he's got no chance of winning it, but he's a British horse in the Champion Hurdle, so that's nice.
Doesn't that just show where we are with the quality of these two-mile hurdlers? It's a shame, but our time will hopefully come. Robbie, you often pick out horses from these big handicaps to go onwards with for other targets. Who caught your eye the most?
I'd have Lord Baddersley quite high up on my list, the fourth for Chris Gordon. He went off 66-1, but I thought he finished like an absolute train to finish fourth. Got a bit detached early on. There'll definitely be a race in him. As Lee touched on, I Like to Move It. Yeah, I could see him being a bit better over slightly further. I think he's probably going to be well handicapped off his revised mark. I'm not sure how much he'll go up a couple of pounds for that, but he would interest me. And indeed, First Street, much more inexperienced and Glory and Fortune, but was only getting £2. And if that horse has finished second in a Grade One, First Street must be quite good, only getting £2 off that horse. And he could be a novice going to follow going forward. But I mean, it always ends up being a good race. And even though we only had 14 runners, I'd imagine there'll be stacks of winners in behind.
Okay, so thank you for pointing in our direction of some of those horses. One horse, British trained horse, who is going to go to the Cheltenham Festival with an outstanding chance is Edward Stone. We'll discuss his Arkell credentials after this.
Are you football crazy? Then Racing Post's new podcast could be just for you. Mark Langdon's Bet Clubs brings all of the best football betting insight from Racing Post's top football tipster. As well as that, Mark will be joined each week by a friend from the betting community to guide listeners through their best bets. Simply search Mark Langdon's Bet Clubs on your podcast app of choice and listen today.
Welcome back to this Monday postcast. We're taking a bit of a bleating with some of the British trained horses and their Cheltenham credentials, given the strength of the Irish team. But if there is one horse that we can pin our hopes on to overcome that, it could well be Edward Stone, who's now the outright favourite for the Arkle at the Cheltenham Festival. And he once again looked very assured in winning the Kingmaker Novices Chase this Grade 2. And Lee, you mentioned about campaigning of horses earlier on in the show. I guess you'd have to be pretty pleased with what Alan King has done with this horse as an eight-year-old in his first season over fences.
Yeah, you most definitely would, Maddie, particularly given the horse was brought down on his first run over fences. Since then, he's had four starts, so five in total this season. He's been properly campaigned, he's been aggressively campaigned, and he's absolutely showing the benefit for it. It's doing him no harm whatsoever. I've got to say, I hadn't really got on the Edward Stone bus until Saturday, but my good, I don't know. I think in my head he was a very good handicapper last season, but perhaps lacked that sort of wow factor you might want to see in an Arkle winner. And of course, with Arkle winners of recent years, you have in your head horses like Shishkin, Sprinter Sakura, Alti, or Duvan. You know, proper superstars who really got your pulse racing. Edward Stone hadn't got my pulse racing. But, and it's a big but, my goodness, there was so much to like about what he did at Warwick on Saturday. He's just a proper smashing pro of a horse. He jumped brilliantly. Those five fences down the back at Warwick are a proper test. There was one he absolutely winged. I love the way he got his head down and he really worked hard for Tom Cannon. I watched that race and I thought that is the Arkle winner. The Irish haven't got as strong a team in this race as they have in some races. I thought the first and second from the Leopardstown race, Blue Lord and Riviera Detail, were good, but they're beatable. And I think Edward Stone will beat them. I thought there was loads to like. So I am now very much on the Edward Stone bus and tooting the horn liberally.
He's turning into a really likeable horse, isn't he? I mean, it's easy to say when you win a range of races, but he just seems to be getting better and better. And he vanquished Third Time Lucky, who's now out to about 20-1 for the Arkle. Robbie, what's your view on this race? You're often an expert when it comes to the Irish form. Do you think this horse, now the 2-1 favourite, can topple the likes of Blue Lord, Riviera Detail?
Yeah, I thought this was absolutely faultless from Edwardstone again. He's clearly the top dog in Britain. However a race pans out, you can't ever see Third Time Lucky reversing the form of him. The horse I would maybe fear from Ireland at this stage is Hort en Couleur, who actually fell quite early on in the Irish Arkle. I mean, who's to know what would have happened in that race because he fell so far out. But, I mean, he might have won it if he stood up, and we might be talking about him as the chief challenger to Edwardstone. He really caught the eye last year. His first run for Woody Mullins, he was third in the Triumph Hurdle, and what we now know is an absolutely red-hot piece of form. He's looked a natural chaser this season. He won his beginner's chase as easy as he wanted. The seconds come out and absolutely hacked up last week since, and for me, he could be the one. But yeah, you'd have to say Edwardstone is the horse to beat in the Arkle.
Okay, I'm going to throw things open a little bit now. I want to give a mention to another horse that ran at Warwick on Saturday called Celebrate Darlin. A horse who has quite an interesting profile, was initially in these shores and with David Pipe, then went to Louisa Carberry and won a listed handicap chase at Auteuil, raced in good company over in France, and is unbeaten in three since he returned. This was his first run over fences on Saturday, and off a mark of 1.35. He stayed on really strongly, caught the eye travelling well, to be Wishing and Hoping and A Mall of Gold. The Paddy Power plate at the festival could be next. I think bookies introduced him at around the 8-1 mark. Philip Hobbs indicated in the aftermath that that will be his target. And I just thought he had so much left in hand. And given that he won by just 3/4 of a length, I'm not sure the handicapper can be too hard on him. Celebrate Darlin would be the one for me. Looking forward from that race. Lee, it was good racing at Exeter on Sunday. Snow Leopardess, the highlight for many. She's just a wonderful mare. But who do you want to talk about?
Oh, yeah. I mean, Snow Leopardess is absolutely fantastic. What a great story. Great people surrounding her. She was as flawless as we have come to expect when winning that mare's chase. I thought as well a tremendously gritty performance by Runta Milan in the veterans chase when Bellamy they picked on came by him early in the straight. I thought that one was sure to win, but Runta Milan found more and in the end won pretty convincingly. So I thought his effort was really meritorious.
Fantastic. And Robbie, any horses enter your tracker at the weekend?
Yeah, definitely. One at Punchestown in the listed 2 mile novice hurdle, Slip of the Tongue. I thought he did remarkably well to win that. He had no right to after an absolute crashing error at the last. He's making a habit of doing that, which is a concern. On his last start, he was third behind Qualixios and Tia Poo. And those horses are going to go for the champion hurdle. This horse is only 5 years old as well. He's got stacks of ability. I think he would have won at Punchestown by a lot further. And yeah, he's definitely one to keep on side for the rest of the season.
Fantastic. Now, Grade 1 action is coming up this weekend and also some Grand National clues as we have the trial at Haydock. We'll find out who the guys fancy in a moment.
The Racing Postcast is supported by Racing Post Members Club. Featuring award-winning journalism, expert tips and renowned form study tools, this is the only racing subscription you need to stay ahead of the field. If you're a new customer, you can use the code POST22, that's POST22, to get 50% off your first 3 months of Members Club Ultimate. That works out at just £17.48 per month to unlock all of the premium features, and it renews at full price thereafter. Head to racingpost.com/postcast for all of the details and to claim.
Welcome back to the final segment of this Monday postcast. We're in the final furlong, but one thing that ought to grab your attention this week, Lee, and it certainly grabbed yours, was the recent goings on in the betting industry and what this could mean for punters in the future. And already it's already starting to impact them regarding restricting accounts, restricting bets. Tell us more about what you wrote about this week.
Yeah, so columnist money tend to have go-to subjects, ones that particularly interest them that they will write about on a regular basis. This is one that I've penned columns on quite a few times in the past, and I did so again on this occasion because, as everyone knows, there is a gambling review going on at the minute within the UK government, and there will be a white paper published over the coming months that in effect sets out the British government's plans for the gambling industry in the future and how that industry should be regulated. We have read and written plenty about affordability checks and the potential for an advertising ban on bookmakers, and they are hugely important subjects. But one thing that's maybe gone slightly under the radar but could still come under the remit within the scope of the gambling review is the subject of punters having accounts closed and bets restricted once they start winning. The Horse Racing Bettors Forum included this within their submission to the review, so one would expect that DCMS officials and ministers will have this on their radar. In Australia, they have a very different system. In most states there is something called a minimum bet limit, which means that on the day of a race, for a metropolitan race, a city race, so tracks like Flemington, Moonee Valley, Randwick, Rosehill, if you're a punter, a bookmaker has to lay you a bet to win up to $2,000 in most states. So you also can't have your account closed unless the bookmaker can show there is a very good reason to have that account closed. And you being a winning punter is not a good reason. These are statutory requirements, so the bookmakers have no choice but to oblige you. They want to have a license to bet in those states. They have to do this. We have nothing like that here. And in all probability, a gambling review isn't going to instruct bookmakers that they have to have minimum bet limits on races. But what it could start the conversation, if you like. It could do things like forcing bookmakers to inform the gambling commission every time they close accounts or impose restrictions. It could at least get bookmakers to make moves in the right direction. And hopefully it could encourage racing leaders and racecourses to think about this more meaningfully, because it is important. If you're a punter who has your account restricted or closed, you are a racing fan who is finding that a key part of your enjoyment of horse racing is being cut off from you. That is bad for the sport of horse racing. It seems to me ridiculous that some of these restrictions you read of punters being limited to bets of a few pounds or even pence on races like the Gold Cup or the Grand National, just because an algorithm kicks in and bookmakers seem unwilling to go beyond that algorithm. You know, we talk about having professional punters in horse racing. We all seem to have professional bookmakers. And part of being a professional bookmaker is to lay bets. A punter who wins a few hundred quid should not be stopped from having bets if that punter is betting honestly and fairly. I would much rather we had a system like the one they have in Australia, and I hope that the gambling review can start to move us in the right direction.
It's going to be a very important couple of weeks coming up, Lee. Robbie, you mentioned a couple of weeks ago on this show that you're now a member of the tipping department. This therefore impacts you really directly. Something that you've had experience with recently.
It does, yeah. I mean, the subject really resonated with me, so I was intrigued to read Lee's column yesterday. I've been having this for years. I reckon I've lost well over 20 accounts in the last couple of years, but a lot of those occasions are kind of for ridiculous reasons. Like, I've lost accounts where I've been down overall, but if you beat SP enough, then that is deemed enough by bookmakers to restrict you, and I don't think that's fair. I'm being made more and more now to have to go into shops. I mean, that's a real hassle. But something that really annoyed me last night, actually, I went to put a bet on with a bookmaker for the Ascot Chase that we're about to discuss. I wanted to take 7-1 about Fakir Duderi. The bet was rejected. I couldn't even get a single penny on, and the price was moved straight away. So, I mean, if you're gonna put the price out there on Oddschecker for someone to potentially have a bet, at least honour it, at least accept it. I can't for the life of me understand why you wouldn't accept the bet, even to smaller stakes, and just move the price without getting any money on. That's not fair to me. And that wound me up, because that awesome question is now a much shorter price as well. And it just irritates me, to be honest.
I think you're well positioned to feel irritated when things like that are going on. Let's move on to that race that you mentioned now. It's at 3:35 at Ascot on Saturday, the Betfair Ascot Chase. Plenty of horses in here who have been advertising their form throughout this season. Mr. Fisher, a recent winner at Kempton, he beat El Dorado Allen, the Denman Chase winner, is in here. St. Calvados, who ran a gallant third in the King George Chase. Dashiell Drasher as well, a real favourite of this National Hunt game. Lee, who are you drawn to on first glance?
I'm drawn to also that Robbie wanted to back but couldn't, Fakir Duderi. He would be able to mount a much more persuasive case than I would do. I would just say, I imagine that they are thinking that they probably can't beat Alaho at Cheltenham. They couldn't beat him last time either on home soil. This is a 150 grand race. He looks like he's probably the best horse in the race based on that resounding win at Aintree in the Melling Chase last season. And it's a great chance for him to win a big pot, which he probably won't get at Cheltenham. So I think this will be, we use that phrase, this is his Gold Cup. I think this could be his Gold Cup.
Around 8 runners in here, so that's a good opportunity for each way punters. Robbie, tell us in a bit more detail why you fancied Fakir Duderi.
Yeah, that was the key reason, really, that Lee just outlined. I just think that he keeps bumping into Alaho. We know Alaho is a kind of a freak of the 2.5 mile division. Fakir Duderi is probably the best horse in this race on ratings. And the last time he went to Britain, he looked absolutely brilliant when winning at Aintree. I think he's a really good horse, and he's still quite a young horse. I think he's only just turned 7. I just felt like they were going to go here, potentially avoid Cheltenham, dodge Alaho, and it could reap rewards. And I think he's definitely the one that looks over. Even now, I'd say he's probably a fair enough price at about 5-1. But yeah, that really did obviously wind me up, because it's another factor as well. If you're betting each way anti-post, you're looking at a race and thinking, you know, this, you've been offered 3 places. I don't think there's going to be 8 runners. But now that becomes less appealing, because only 8 have turned up. So yeah, but Fakir Duderi would be the one for me.
Okay, let's move on to the 240 at Haydock, the William Hill Grand National Trial Handicap Chase. It's a Grade 3 and the market's headed by Secret Reprieve, who won the Welsh Grand National last season. Encard is in there, course winner, of course. Sam Brown, second to Royal Pagai in the Peter Marsh. Fortescue, a Black Lion, who's been a real resurgence this season. And perhaps most interestingly, Bristol Demai, the 11-year-old, now rated 159. Perhaps he'll be able to capitalise on a declining handicap mark. What do you make of this contest, Lynn?
I think it could be a super contest. It's a race that has regressed slightly in recent years. It isn't what it used to be, but we've got a few real strong names in this year's race. Black Lion is the one that I think is the most interesting in some ways, because he's a horse who he's a proper veteran. He's 13 years old, but he's had this wonderful revival since joining Dan Skelton. His two wins at Haydock have been fabulous to watch. He won by 28 lengths last time over this course and distance. He's gone up in the weights to 145. But if you find a horse that enjoys racing on horrible ground at Haydock, that horse is worth it's worth a fortune to you as a punter. And I think I wouldn't be at all surprised to see Black Lion win this race. Bristol Demai, as we know, also adores racing on heavy ground at Haydock, as a few in this field do. He's also in the Rendlesham Hurdle, so they could go that direction within two. But I'd love to see Black Lion win it.
Okay, Lee's opting for the in-form veteran Black Lion. I'm quite interested by Mint Condition for the Jenny Candlish team. A novice, so could well be unexposed. I think he might want this extreme trip and has good form at Haydock, second and first at the track this season. Robbie, who do you fancy?
Yeah, I backed Secret Reprieve for this couple of weeks ago. I just feel he's still on a really good mark. I think the handicap has not done him too badly by dropping him £2 for his Welsh National Six. I think he'd have badly needed that. I know Evan Williams didn't really have a clear run at it with him. He wanted to get a run into him before the Welsh National, but he just never got the opportunity. I mean, he's only £4 higher than winning the previous season's Welsh National. Evan Williams been mopping up a lot of these staying handicap chases, and Secret Reprieve, I mean, he's still very lightly raced. He's only run 10 times his life. He's only 8 years old. I can't imagine we've seen the best of him, and I think he's definitely handicapped to go close off his mark.
Wonderful. Let's open up the floor a little bit now and get some naps for this week. We had a winner last week when Chris tipped Get a Star, 2-1 winner. So just pay to follow the lad's selections. Lee, I'll go to you first. Who do you fancy most?
This will not be beaten.
I just mentioned a horse who I've backed for the Albert Bartlett at Cheltenham, Hillcrest, who was very unfortunate to lose his jockey at Cheltenham last time. Looks like he'll have another go to prove his Cheltenham credentials on Saturday at Haydock. So I'm looking forward to seeing him run. And also, good card at Sandown on Thursday. Anyone who's in and around Sandown, get there on Thursday, should do. Royal Artillery Gold Cup Day, a real famous old race for the military riders. That's worth watching too.
Okay, Robbie?
I'm going to stick with Fakir Duda in the Ascot Chase, 3:35 Ascot on Saturday. I just think he's going to go very, very close to winning.
Okay, go big or go home is Robbie's mantra when it comes to Fakir Duderi. Keep the confidence with Joseph O'Brien's horse. That's all we've got time for today. The guys will be back on Friday to go through the cards with you in detail. Please make sure to rate, review and subscribe, and we'll see you again next week.